beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Right, welcome again to Animation Aficionados. This is a special crossover episode we're doing with Tooncast Beyond. We are going to be talking about the DC animated movies. These are the direct-to-DVD animated feature films that Warner Brothers and DC Comics made in the late 90s into the 2000s, into the 2010s. I'm your host, Ben, and we're joined by my co-host, TV's Mr. Neil.
Fusion ha!
See, and we also have Mike Blanchard here.
Well, what was that introduction?
And we also have Mike Blanchard here from Tooncast Beyond.
Yes. This was my idea, damn it. This is my show. You only get to do the introduction. No, for Tooncast Beyond listeners, this will be episode 2. This is starting our DC Universe Animated Movie Spotlight. We will be running this from episode 2 to episode 14. We're going to start with Superman Doomsday and go all the way up to next February's Justice League Doom feature. And these did not start in the late 90s, Ben. These started 2006, I believe. 2006, 2007 is when they started.
Actually, Superman Doomsday, I have to correct you, was 2007, September 18th, 2007.
Right, but you said the late 90s, 2000s, 2010s is what you said originally, and it was not done in the late 90s.
I apologize for that oversight. It's they made a lot of animated feature films in a very short amount of time then.
Exactly. They're just like the Beatles. They made a lot of albums in 8 years, and then they lived on in infamy after that.
I love George Harrison's music, but moving on.
Yes.
with Superman Doomsday, this is basically a distillation of what is one of the most infamous comic storylines in the 90s, The Death of Superman. It's a distillation, a simplification, and where they trim unnecessary characters, mix certain characters together, and basically shorten the entire storyline to fit better in a movie format. And I gotta be honest, I was kind of underwhelmed by this film. I watched it, I tried to find something I would like in it, but overall, it was underwhelming for me.
Yeah, this movie, and it's funny, this movie basically, as you said, takes What was Death of Superman? Just wasn't issue the Black issue 75. It was like a whole series. It was like a whole comic run, right?
It was about a year's worth of comics from four separate titles, because you have to remember, Superman ran in four different titles. There was Adventures of Superman, Superman, Action Comics, and the fourth one escapes me right now. Basically, back in the 90s, there were these four titles, you know. And essentially, when DC was really coordinating this with the editor-in-chief, they released one of these comics every week, and it's a different team with each comic, but they like coordinated well. They had Tom Grummett and Carl Kessel working on one title. I think it was Adventures. You had Dan Jurgens working on, I believe it was, and I'm probably wrong about this, I believe he was working on Action Comics, Dan Jurgens. It was either Action or just Superman that he was working on. And and basically you had two other teams that were working on the other two titles, and they decided to make a really long story called The Death of Superman. And this is just for background. What happened is, storyline was, there's this alien that was buried in the earth that's called Doomsday. And by the way, there was a lot of playing behind it, because the version of the Justice League that Doomsday fought were basically the scrubs, because there was no Wonder Woman. There was no Green Lantern. There was no Flash. There was no Martian Manhunter. Their team consisted of Fire, Ice, Guy Gardner, not Green Lantern at the time. That was back when he had the yellow power ring, and a black guy called Bloodworm.
Wow!
I know.
Wow. Was Marvin and Wendy in there too?
Oh, Maxima was there too. I forgot Maxima. Beetle got the shit beat out of him.
Oh my God, Maxima! Don't even get me started. Oh,
and,
yeah,
like I said, this was like the loser version of the Justice League, and basically it was all these guys and Superman, and all of them got trounced except for Superman. And Superman finally, at the end of the Death of Superman story, finally died, and then there was the Funeral for a Friend story, which was a one issue story, but it was a beautiful one where finally, the real Justice League is back, and they're all wearing the black armbands, and they're having a funeral for Superman. And then there was what they called the Reign of the Supermen, which was where there were four people that came that said that they were the new Superman. Actually, three people said they were the new Superman. That there was the Eradicator that had the yellow visor. There was Steel. What? Yeah.
John
Steel, who actually, when I was waiting to say, he wasn't Superman. He was just doing this in Superman's honor. Mm-hmm. There was Cyborg Superman, who turned out to be Hank Henshaw, the villain from an earlier story, which was actually a spoof of Fantastic Four. And the fourth one was Kal-El Superboy, who was a clone. Not a Superman, but a clone of... just a human clone with his genetic structure to be modeled to be as Kryptonian as possible. And essentially what happened was, it turns out none of these guys were Superman. Because the real Superman was being revived in the Fortress of Solitude and was wearing a black costume and had long hair.
He had a mullet.
Yeah, so begins the saga of the super mullet.
And essentially, there's a lot of lead into this, because this is back when Lex Luthor was in a clone body and posing as his own son, Alexander Luthor, and he had an Australian accent and long flowing red hair and a red beard.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
So they basically condensed a year's worth of comics into a 70, 80-minute film.
That's true, but like I said, if you ever pick up the Death of Superman trade paperback, you have to understand it's more than just a year's worth of comics. It's,
right.
Like I said, the events that led to the scrub version of the Justice League that was in this story is an interesting one, and the story about and the story about everything else is you know, like the story about Lex Luthor's clone body. It was another story. You know, they saved Lex Luthor's brain was the name of the trade paperback for that one.
Oh my God.
Now, the way this came about, if I remember correctly, is that you had these four teams that would like meet every week and discuss how they're going to connect all four of the books. And every week someone would just jokingly say, let's kill him.
Yeah. And finally the editor-in-chief said, okay. And the idea was the four teams were saying, were said, okay, what would be your idea of how you would bring Superman back? And the four teams said four different ways. And finally, you know, the editor says, well, let's do all of them.
Yeah.
And like I said, it turns out that none of them were the real Superman. It's the one in the black suit. Yeah. And yes, this movie is basically a condensing of it, but I think that's part of what makes it lose its charm, because all four of the Supermen from the Reign of the Superman stories are wildly famous and popular and a big part of the Superman mythos to this day. Mm-hmm. Steel is a huge part of the mythos. Superboy is a big part of the mythos. Eradicator was instrumental in a lot of the new Superman stories, and Hank Henshaw was an ongoing Superman villain for the longest time. Condense it to just some random Superman clone, I think, was more of a disservice to the story than a strength to the story.
Yeah. Now, this movie and this entire series comes just off the heels of them ending Justice League. And this is what Bruce Timm and his people that he put together wanted to do afterwards. They wanted to do direct-to-DVD films, and I love that they're doing this. I love the fact that they're not, for the most part, in most of these films, they're not pulling any punches. They don't honestly give a crap about censorship, because these are the very first ever PG-13 movies because of all the violence and everything else that's in them.
You have Superman literally puking up a bucket worth of blood.
Yeah.
And you know what? That actually kind of turns me off a bit, because it just doesn't seem, you know, it seems like they did that just to do it. You know, that, you know, they increased the violence for the sake of just increasing the violence versus doing it because it was actually a perfect time to do it. And like I said, I think this was the first step to the other, much better, in my opinion, later direct-to-DVD movies. But this was a necessary step. This was definitely a necessary step.
Yeah, this was a project that they wanted to launch with. Most everyone in the world knows who Superman is. He is very popular in culture these days. And I love how they worked into a bunch of nods to the other Superman projects. You know, you've got stuff from Superman the Animated Series in here, stuff from the Fleischer Superman cartoons, the bullet car from the Bulleteers.
And you even have Kevin Smith in a little special cameo.
Yeah, yes. As much as I like Kevin Smith's movies, I don't care that he cameoed here.
Well, it's based off of a speech he made at a college when they asked him about his experience with Superman Lives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine everyone's familiar with that.
Giant freaking spider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, Kevin Smith says, did we really need to see him destroy a giant mechanical spider? And then he cups his hands over his mouth as a child. Lame!
Yeah. Now, one of my notes says, and I know this is factually accurate, but the character of Mercy, Lex's assistant, originally appeared, obviously, in Superman the Animated Series in the 90s as his chauffeur/bodyguard. In this film, she's his corporate assistant. Well, that also happened in Justice League. She took over. Well, she didn't take over the company, but
yeah,
he kind of did. Well, he left her in charge. I mean, who else is going to do it? She did kind of. Yeah, you're right. She did kind of take it over. But I mean, I like the fact that they are still using the two very, you know, different versions of Mercy. And of course, James Marsters, who voiced Lex here, also portrayed the character of quote-unquote Brainiac Milton Fine in Smallville. As much as I like James Marsters, I just don't.
He did a pretty good performance, except for the Brokeback scene.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about that scene. I don't know any other word to describe it.
Yeah. Why can't I quit you?
Yeah. Yeah. God. That's exactly what it was. Yes.
So let's talk about the other cast. I'm just going to run them down really quickly here. You got Adam Baldwin as Clark Kent / Superman, and Haish as Lois Lane.
Was Maggie Sawyer in this?
Huh?
Was Maggie Sawyer in this?
I don't think so.
No, she is not, to my knowledge, no.
It's a lesbian joke.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you have Jimmy Olsen with an earring.
Yeah, the other voice actors, you got John DiMaggio as Toyman, Tom Kenny as the robot, Swoozie Kurtz as Martha Kent, Cree Summer as Mercy Graves, Ray Wise as Perry White. I thought that was interesting casting. Adam Wiley as Jimmy, and then the rest of them are, you know, newscasters and, you know.
They made Toyman, like, not creepy like he was in the animated series, but kind of like, you know, the other kind of creepy, like lives with his mom and drives around in a van creepy.
See, I found Toyman in the animated series to be just funny. He wasn't creepy at all to me. In Superman the Animated Series?
You didn't find that doll mask creepy?
Not as creepy as his appearance here, no.
No, like I said, but this is full-on drives around in a van, lives at his mother's house, and do you want to see my puppy?
Oh, good Lord.
Drinks overall, a Long Island iced tea.
Oh,
he went there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Tooncast Beyond does not endorse the comments of Neil.
Well, I do.
All right, so what I want to talk about is Adam Baldwin and Anne Heche. All right, Adam Baldwin is great in anything he does except voicing Superman. I did not believe...
He wouldn't be my fifth choice, that's for sure. And
He's not the worst voice actor that has voiced Superman, I'll give you that. But at the same time, he's still not one of my favorites.
And I got to be honest, this design for Lois Lane in this movie did not do anything for me. It was the most plain version of Lois Lane I've ever seen. It doesn't have that awesome, you know, skirt from the animated series, and it didn't have the pure sexiness of All Star.
That skirt.
Yeah, that skirt. That's all that needs to be said is that skirt.
That skirt.
And Anne Heche, I'm sorry, she's no fucking voice actor. She just isn't. You know, as Ben said, for me, this was the blandest version of Lois animated ever.
Yeah. This movie kept throwing me because I kept expecting her to say something about lava seeping up from beneath the city.
You also have, like I said, just some really off scenes here. Like, for instance, the scene where the clone Superman removes the kill switch from his brain.
Now, see, that's the only scene in the entire movie that I absolutely love. I thought that was hilarious.
Only Mike Blanchard would think, you know, lobotomizing yourself is hilarious.
Hey.
Well, he was already kind of lobotomized. He really didn't have any sort of moral.
Plus, he's a clone. It doesn't matter. Yeah. He's an actual human.
Well, he's not a human. He's a Kryptonian. So there.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
But you also have some really badly written dialogue, like when they had the real Superman show up in the black costume. It's like, bad Superman? Badder Superman. Uh-oh. I'm like, oh god, Jimmy, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I really did like Swoozie's performance as Martha, though. She's not the best voice for Martha, but for this movie and this feel of this animation, I liked it. I thought, you know, she portrayed Martha very well.
And, of course, you also have Superman using, you know what? The one thing that bugs me is you actually have Superman actually physically kill the clone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's no Disney death. It's Superman fucking kills the clone.
Yeah. Yep.
And I don't know. That just seems wrong to me. It does.
No, I know. I agree. I mean, you know, even though it is a clone, it should have been, maybe he should have done it off, like, just slightly off screen or something like that. But, I mean, that's just a very unsettling visual.
even though these movies are PG-13, they are mainly for, you know, people that are like us, that are fans of, you know, comics and animation and stuff like that. You know, still, you can't. I wouldn't even show this to a 13-year-old.
No.
I just would, you know. I mean, these are not movies for kids. These are, you know, these are the creators, Bruce Timm and his team. These are them going after what they want to do because they are comic geeks. And for some people that have weak stomachs, some of the scenes in this movie and as well as the rest of the films that are in the spotlight here, you know, people aren't going to watch them because of that, or they might just skip over that scene. But still, I mean, overall, this movie, this is not one of my favorites out of the entire ones that they've done so far.
I will actually have to go on a limb and say this is actually the worst of the ones because, again, you have to keep in mind that when I say worst, that doesn't mean it's necessarily terrible as much as it's just the worst out of all the DC originals, because you have to also remember, you know, they actually had a direct competition for Marvel, and Marvel's direct-to-DVD animated films are a pile.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're going to do the DC versus Marvel comparison, granted, you know, DC has a couple of ones that I don't care for, but overall, I would watch this movie over any Marvel anime, you know, the Iron Man animated movie or the Avengers animated movie. I would watch this over those any day.
Next Avengers animated movie.
God, seriously?
Tony Stark is their mentor, and he's like an old man. Yes, it
and was. He's waiting for the world to break. I bet they use that theme song.
No.
No.
It's well, the sad thing is that it actually has a better character design set than the Avengers cartoon series, but we're digressing. I just really didn't care for Superman Doomsday, and it's the one that I don't own because that tells you something. I don't own it, and I'm a big Bruce Timm fanboy, and I don't own this. I think there's lots of missteps here. I think a lot of missteps were based on the fact that they wanted to do something more mature just for the sake of saying it's more mature, and that's where the origin of these missteps are, like Superman puking that gallon of blood. I mean, God damn, did you see how much blood that was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what threw me. The movie's called Superman Doomsday. You know,
barely in it.
Yeah, I think he's dead within the first 15 minutes. When it first started, I was like, oh man, they're getting right into this. And then he dies, and I'm like, wait, this isn't the movie I thought it was going to be. Wait. Oh no. I kept thinking Doomsday was going to come back for the end, and that didn't happen.
And have the clone die fighting Doomsday to give Superman a chance or something like that. And
yeah,
Superman's not a dirty murderer.
Yeah,
it just and what really throws me about this is the fact that you basically have, you know, if in the Lester cut, Superman didn't, you know, reverse the world. Where in this movie, Lois knows the secret. She's sleeping at the fortress. That's just, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Like Ben said, I know they were going for it. They were going for the more mature. They were going for, you know, starting off on a really good note and a really good foot. The problem is this movie didn't resonate so well with people. To me, this almost, you know, diminishes what the comic was. You know, this gives the comic a bad name. You know, and there are going to be other of these movies in the spotlight that I just don't care for either.
I think part of this is when we did the interview with Marv Wolfman, mm-hmm. and we asked him how Crisis, which is huge. I mean, we talk about Death of Superman being huge, and the Reign of the Superman being huge. You know, those are pretty. Those are as thick as together. They're about as thick as a phone book. But Crisis is even bigger than that.
And Crisis is just ever spanning.
And basically, you know, could that be adapted into a 2-hour movie? Marvel opens it absolutely, but his idea was basically to distill it to one point of view. And That's essentially what they did here, but it didn't work because, like I said, there is so much of the mythos, of the current Superman mythos, well, at least until after the New 52, that that was tied into Death and Reign that is lost here because they trimmed, and I think they trimmed too much without keeping some of the essence.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And this is coming from someone who has never read those comics. I've seen them here and there, but I've never actually had a chance. Like back when that happened in the 90s, when you had the death of Superman, I remember all the news items, all the, you know, everybody lining up at their comic shops to get... I never had a chance to get a copy of it. But just from, you know, looking online about stuff about that's in the comics and stuff, it's just like... This movie is, like Ben said, it's they trimmed too much out of it. And while the movie, it does have a beginning, middle, and end story, the story isn't that great.
And the dialogue isn't very memorable. I have to be honest. When I can remember a line from fucking Brainiac Attacks over this movie, that tells you something.
Got the tiki torches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I do remember Bad Superman and Batter Superman. Because it was... because the whole idea was Bruce Timm was playing on the image of Superman's now in all black with a mullet with a gun.
Oh, so he's basically Solid Snake with superpowers.
Yeah. And he's fighting against the Superman that's dressed traditionally, except for the fact he has a hole in his head.
See, that just made me think of the clone Superman with like the exclamation point above his head when he sees when he sees the real Superman coming.
Yeah, put in post the exclamation sound from Metal Gear Solid.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, that's right. I love that stuff. But anyway,
I think that this movie just was a misstep. Let me put it this way. This is definitely better than Brainiac Attacks. That's for damn sure.
This is better than Brainiac Attacks, but at the same time, you have two very different movies there. I mean, Brainiac Attacks, even though it's not in the STAS continuity of the DCAU, it's still the DCAU style, whereas this is something completely different as far as the animation goes.
That's true.
The one thing, I think it's this movie, one thing that really pissed me off, I understand that they wanted to design Superman slightly different as far as...
The extra lines on his face.
Dude, Superman does not need a fucking dent in his cheek. It looks like somebody just punched him and his skin never grew back.
Well, it was Doomsday that punched him.
Regardless... No. I'm talking about before, dude.
Part of the problem is Bruce Timm's art style is so clean that when you ever try to add lines in for definition, it's an experiment, and this was a failed experiment.
Yes. We here at Neil, do you have anything else you want to say about the actual movie or anything?
No, not really.
Okay, Ben, do you have anything else you want to say anything about the movie? Do we have anything we didn't cover?
Not really, but I do have to say whether I recommend it or not.
Okay, hold on. Hold that thought. We here at Tooncast Beyond we are the IGN replacement crew. Everything that IGN ranks on their website, all of their top lists, we at the Geekcast Radio Network hate it. So we have a 1-4 scale. Number one is don't watch this even if it's free. Number two is worth a watch if it's free on TV. Number three is worth adding to the Netflix list, which it's one of the DC movies that actually isn't even on the Netflix streaming. It's DVD only for that. And number four is this is a must buy, a must add to your DVD collection. So, Ben, 1-4, what do you give it?
I would say if you're able to watch it, not the TV cut, but actually watch the DVD cut for free, watch it, because I think that everyone has to see this just to see... Just how damn bloody this gets, just for the damn sake of it, and just sort of bask in it and say, okay, Wonder Woman is fucking gold now.
Neil, what do you rank it?
I'll give it a 2.
Yeah.
an extra flush.
Oh, you're not gonna give it an Upper Decker?
I will also give it a 2. I actually, back when I was collecting DVDs, I actually did buy it. I bought it for the special features because after I watched the movie, I was like, that kind of sucked. The special features on the 2-disc edition are very well done. You have 4 episodes from Superman the Animated Series. You have a couple of behind-the-scenes looks at how they made this movie. So the special features on the DVD are nice, but I don't think that the special features in this case rank you to buy the DVD. So I will give it a 2 as well. And as I said, it is on DVD, but before we get to that, we also talk about what the movie has made. And I told Neil this off air and I sent him the link. I'll have to send it to Ben as well. Out of all the DC Universe animated original movies, Superman Doomsday, I guess people love bad movies. It is made the most out of all of
them.
Well,
think about this. What the hell is wrong with you people?
Think about it like this. People bought this without knowing what it is at first, without even seeing it. They bought it, you know, that's a sale. They count that as a sale. And right. Think about it. If the other ones don't perform as well, and this is the first one, that's the correlation.
Right. This one made $9,447,577 in gross. The units were sold were 683,383. The other ones we will talk about as we go along, but I will just I'm not going to tell you guys in what order these are in, but I'm going to go ahead and go down the line. One of them so far has made $1,355,000. Others have made 2, 4, 3, 6, 6, 5, 8, 6, 7, 8, and 5. So, you know, stay tuned to these spotlight episodes where we will tell you which ones made what. But none of them have eclipsed the $9 million that this one has made.
It's over $9 million!
Yeah, it's over $9
million! What? $9 million?
And as I said before, it is on DVD. It's on Blu-ray. Actually, the Blu-ray was delayed. I don't have any new information on the Blu-ray release.
Well, why do you want to watch crap in high density?
High definition. Yeah, that's true.
And so we all gave it number 2. So this is definitely an Upper Decker of a movie.
Yeah, and with that, Tooncast Beyond is going to take a break. We're going to head to some ads, and we'll come back to close the show.
All right.
Tooncast will be back after these messages.
The Webcast Beacon Network has been covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007, starting with the Webcomic Beacon, a topical webcomics podcast with a jovial bunch of misfits like your local morning radio show. Also, the Webcomic Beacon newscast recaps, reviews, and discussions of community and industry news relative to comic creators, especially of digital distribution. Also, the Tropecast, the ever-tangential discussion of literary and visual memes. And finally, Web Fiction World. Before webcomics, there was independent and self-published web-release written fiction and literature. Find this all at webcastbeacon.com. Be sure to grab a master RSS feed or master iTunes feed and not miss a thing.
Tooncast is dedicated to the cartoons we grew up with. 100 episodes and more make up one of the GCRN's most popular podcasts. Join hosts TFG1 Mike, Optimus Solo, Terror the Rising Star, and tons of guest hosts. We also have voice actor and writer interviews. Tune in to Tooncast as we look back on the cartoons that defined us as geeks. You can find Tooncast on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Tune in.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Greg.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind? That's right. It's Joe news, reviews, and special guests like you've never heard them before delivered right to your MP3 player.
Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right. Hey.
We're just kidding, Chuck. Kind of.
Yeah. Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right. Hey.
It's What's on Joe Mind. Every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
Can I say something about Transformers?
No!
Movie Week in Review is the GeekCast Radio Network's weekly movie podcast. Steve and Mike take a look back on their favorite films and give you their thoughts. They also bring in co-hosts at times. If you are a movie buff, listen to MWire only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and AnimationAficionados.com.
You can now hear the GeekCast Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear GeekCast Radio, you'll have a chance to win money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. During registration, hit the promo code box and enter GeekCast Radio, all one word, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episodes of the shows will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter promo code GeekCast Radio when you register.
We're back, and as per tradition for Mike, we will do some final thoughts.
Yes, final thoughts is this one's all right. It's not the worst PG-13 animated movie out there, but it still doesn't hold. It just there's just too much stuff that I just didn't like about this. Like I said before, the only scene I really kind of got a kick out of was the, you know, haircut lobotomizing scene. I guess I'm just a sick bastard like that. I don't know. Neil, what are your final thoughts on Doomsday?
Oh, boy. This this movie... Watch anything else. Don't watch this if it's free, like I said when we rated it. I didn't really care for this much at all. I don't know. I got nothing. How about you, Ben?
They lost me with the bucket of blood.
And on that note, thank you for joining us here on the Tooncast Beyond Animation Aficionados DC Universe Movies crossover. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit our websites, geekcastradio.com and animationaficionados.com. You can leave the show's feedback in iTunes. We are still working on getting the Tooncast Beyond feed into iTunes. We have no idea what's going on with that. You can follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Tooncast Beyond. Mine is TFG1 Mike. Neil, what is your Twitter?
We do have a aficionados.
Yeah. Yeah, my personal Twitter, I think it's Neil Sama, but I don't use it that much. Okay. Yeah, I don't check it that often, so if you Twitter me, it's going to be a while before I respond.
We don't want to hear about anyone Twittering Neil.
No.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCast Radio Network. You can also find Animation Aficionados over on Facebook as well. You can call our voicemail line, tell us the show you're leaving the message for, and your name, 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond and Animation Aficionados and wish you'll join us next time when we will be continuing the DC Universe Animated Movie Spotlight with Justice League New Frontier. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Ben, the host.
And TVC Mr. Neil.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Wildcat Grant, solidly ahead on
point. Hello.
Hello, Barry.
Iris, I thought you had to work tonight.
I do, but I wanted to tell you how much I miss you. You have no idea.
Come on, how could you miss me? I mean, you're in Las Vegas, interviewing all those singers and movie stars.
It's the fast lane.
There are lots of potholes in that lane, let me tell you.